than the eyewitness.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. FBI Director Robert Mueller today announced what he described as a dramatic restructuring of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Less investigation, more analysis, less chasing crooks, more preventing terrorism. Fighting terrorism, he said, is now firmly at the top of the FBI priority list. The proposed changes shift the core focus of the agency from crime investigation to anticipating and stopping terrorism. More than 500 agents will be reassigned from traditional crime units to the agency's counterterrorism division. The FBI has been criticized even by its own agents for fumbling key warning signs before 9/11. Can the new FBI stop the next terrorist threat? Buck Revell is former Deputy Director of Investigative and Intelligence Operations with the FBI. I asked what struck him as most important about what the director had to say today.
I think the recognition that this is a long-term and very difficult task that the Bureau has, that additional resources are going to be required, and that they can't be met just with reallocating from other FBI priorities, that additional new resources will be required, that an emphasis on analysis will have to take its place beside investigations as a key element of FBI responsibility. In the past, analysis has been in support of investigations. I think in the future that investigations may be in support of analysis. In other words, that getting out with the warnings and getting out with the preemptive actions may indeed be the most important part of what the FBI will have to do.
Buck Revell, you had a long and distinguished career with the FBI. This is a major shift, as it's being described, a reshaping of mission, culture, structure, the works. Is the FBI up to this?
Oh, sure, absolutely. After J. Edgar Hoover died and Clarence Kelly came in, he set up a group of agents within the organization to study the organization, its mission, and its responsibilities. He then established the national priorities. At that time, it was counterintelligence, organized crime, and white-collar crime. In 1982, on the recommendation, Director Webster added terrorism to that. The FBI pulled agents out of a number of areas where they in the past had a large amount of activity, things like interstate crimes, auto theft, theft from interstate shipment, and so forth, and put them into the priority areas. Then in 1982, when the FBI received drug enforcement jurisdiction, pulled agents from other responsibilities to set up a strategic approach to drug investigations and using the RICO statutes and the FBI's organized crime capabilities. So there have been a number of reshaping of missions in the past, and I think that, you know, this is one that is necessary to face the times that the Bureau does today.
There's been a lot of criticism just in the past few weeks of the FBI for its failure to connect the dots pre-9/11, and that comes on top of very hotly debated and much criticized operations elsewhere, Ruby Ridge, Waco, Wenho Lee, the missing Timothy McVeigh files, the Hansen case. Has there been something fundamentally wrong inside the FBI?
I think that certainly the fact that there needs to be additional analysis, and there certainly needs to be better means of communicating information to law enforcement, and there needs to be partnering on even beyond the task forces, which actually the FBI has been building on with state and local since 1980. But certainly, you know, I think Bob Mueller is calling it as he sees it. I disagree with some of the criticism that's out there, particularly from the political side, in that the memorandum from Phoenix was not a matter of intelligence, and it wasn't a matter of evidence. It was a matter of speculation, and it was thoughtful speculation, and certainly should be factored into overall analysis. But it was not something in which anybody could act other than to look for more information and details that might match up with this particular concern. As far as the Moussaoui case, I think when you go back and look at this in hindsight, you'll see that certainly they should have moved forward on it as Minneapolis did, but likely the call at headquarters that it did not meet the criteria of the FISA statute, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act statute, was probably at that time correct. Now, I think there should have been an additional step. I think that step should have been going all the way to the Attorney General and perhaps even asking the President for authority to do a warrantless search. So I think there should have been a much more urgent approach to that on the part of headquarters, but I don't know that their decision to not seek a FISA warrant was not correct based on the law as it was at that time. And I think that that statute, which required that you have information that a person was an agent of a foreign power or of a terrorist organization, and I believe what the French sent was that he was a known radical, Islamic radical, but they didn't necessarily associate him with Al-Qaeda or Hamas or Hezbollah or any of the organizations that would have been recognized by the FISA court as a international terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm. Buck Revelle, how do you take an organization with as much tradition as the FBI has and shift it from investigation to analysis? Can you train the people who are there to do that? Do you have to bring in a whole new generation of people?
FBI agents, by and large, will not be very good analysts. That's not their training. That's not their background. That's not their experience. So additional analysts will have to be brought in from probably other agencies, initially from the CIA and probably some from the military. The analysts that the FBI has will have to be continued to be trained and upgraded. And there will have to be a substantial recruitment for the kind of people that make really good analysts. The most important thing is going to be for the Congress and for the American people to decide that they are willing to allow the law enforcement agencies, in this case the FBI, to go forward with active programs. We've tried in the past to collect intelligence on domestic groups and those groups that were from overseas but operating domestically and have been thwarted and often criticized. And you can't, if you're going to have this balanced approach, if you're going to say, get out there and find the information to stop these type events, then you've got to accept that it's going to require collecting intelligence against people that don't want intelligence collected.
So you're suggesting there's another shoe to drop here when the public really takes on board what it means to have an agency doing this kind of work.
You can't analyze if you don't have information. The only way you get information is to get out and seek that information, and sometimes the way you get that information is unsettling to other people. It's going to require that there be agents and undercover operatives going to meetings, perhaps some of them in mosques and other locations. It's going to require that material that is now being distributed virtually without scrutiny starts being scrutinized, that the Internet, all the track activity that's going back and forth across the Internet, that they will be looking for information that would lead towards clues as to activity. In other words, if you want to have scrutiny of the elements that are posing a threat to the United States, there has to be an information collection process, and it can't be just overseas. It has to be domestic as well.
Buck Revelle, how does that process sit with you as an American? Do you feel comfortable with it?
Well, I think it needs to be focused. I think it needs to be based upon a reasonable approach to collect information. I do not want to see us engage in warrantless searches or in any type of activities that would be considered illegal or improper. On the other hand, in the past, the FBI has been precluded from collecting public information that you as a journalist or anyone else could have collected, but the FBI was prohibited because of the Attorney General guidelines and the Privacy Act from even collecting that sort of public information.
Sounds like we're headed into a new era here.
I think so, and just saying you're going to change the culture at the FBI is not going to cut it. It's not going to make the America safer. We're going to have to look at how you obtain information and what you do with that information if we're going to have any opportunity at all to prevent terrorism.
Buck Revelle, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Buck Revelle is former Deputy Director of Investigative and Intelligence Operations for the FBI. He spoke with me earlier today from Washington.
After 9/11, it became clearer than ever that we had to fundamentally change the way we do our business. Responding to the post-9/11 realities requires a redesigned and a refocused FBI.
FBI Director Robert Mueller speaking earlier today in Washington. Are you confident that the FBI will be ready to anticipate and stop the next terrorist act? Or will it take more than a reassigning of agents and a restatement of purpose? Should fighting terrorism be the top priority for the FBI? What about old-fashioned crime? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Washington is Elaine Shannon, criminal justice correspondent with Time Magazine. She's author of The Spy Next Door, The Extraordinary Secret Life of Robert Philip Hansen, the most damaging FBI agent in U.S. history. Good evening and welcome, Elaine Shannon.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. And with us from Vermont Public Radio's studios is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Elaine Shannon, take us into this. There has been a lot of skepticism lately about a lot that's come out of the FBI, but Robert Mueller is today kind of has the feeling of making a clean breast of it and saying we're going to change here, we're going to change in a big way. The New York Times describes it as the beginning of a transformation of a law enforcement agency into what will be, at its core, a domestic intelligence agency. Do you agree with that analysis? And putting skepticism aside for a moment, are the changes that Mueller's describing, is this what it's going to take? Is this the goods to transform, to reshape this bureau?
Well, actually, I'm quite interested in what happens tomorrow. There's another press conference in which they're going to talk about the guidelines that govern international terrorism cases. These are actually classified, but maybe they'll tell us something about whether or not they're going to relax some of the post-Watergate strictures on opening those kinds of cases, as Buck Revelle just referred to.
And this will be John Ashcroft presenting tomorrow, is that right?
And Mueller and Larry mm-hmm. Thompson, the Deputy Attorney General, they've been looking at these things. And there's been complaining from the field that the people I talk to don't say, hey, I want to violate the Constitution and I want to break into people's houses without a warrant. Mm-hmm. What they say is, I have to get 10 people at headquarters, 3 people in my field office, 20 people at the Justice Department to look at all of this stuff, and by the time I get done, then I hear back 6 months later that my evidence is stale, and I have to go get more.
And this is the complaint ridiculous. This is the complaint of Colleen Rowley, for example, in Minneapolis about Massawi, saying she tried to get this up the chain, and people just weren't taking it.
Well, Bob Mueller said it should have gone up the chain. She met more resistance and intransigence that she should have, and he wants a headquarters that will listen to the people in the field and say, okay, let's see what you've got. Let's see how we can, if we can get a warrant that mm-hmm. is legally acceptable. He said we're not going to drop our allegiance to the Constitution in order to get things done faster. That's wrong. But if there's just a lot of bureaucratic time-wasting, oh, let's cut to the chase here. And I think that's good.
Mm-hmm. Elaine Shannon, you know this agency so well inside and out. What's being described today is really a pretty radical change. It's the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And we're told by Mueller, by Buck Revelle, that investigation is now to take a back seat to analysis. Is this agency capable of that change?
Well, I think it's going to be both, and we'll see. There is a lot of difference between gathering string for an intelligence-type case, mm-hmm. as people did for years and years in counterespionage cases. And, boy, the counterespionage people made fun of the people on the criminal investigative side. They call them knuckle-draggers and said they never read anything but the sports pages. And the people on the criminal investigation side said that they call the intelligence side the palm tree peekers, and they call them the mm-hmm. shepherds, and they call themselves the cowboys. And, joshed about how slow the intelligence people were and how they didn't make that many arrests. And so, I mean, there's a powerful culture in favor of action, going out, collaring people, taking them into court, writing an affidavit and describe what you saw, which is very difficult to make conform to gathering intelligence about people who may simply be studying accounting.
And all that was celebrated, Jack Beatty, knuckle-draggers and cowboys, and yet the FBI was asked to go out and do these investigations and bring in that number of arrests and convictions.
Yes, it was. And the Bureau is sort of, if you look at it now, many of its current problems result from reactions to its past problems. That is, the post-Watergate, post-60s reforms, which essentially put a brake on its ability to make transparent much of what happens in American society, all to the good. But on the bad side, of course, it allows terrorists to operate under a cover that they wouldn't have had in the years when J. Edgar Hoover could pretty much do what he wanted with that institution.
We're talking tonight about reshaping the FBI, about changing it from an agency of investigation to one of analysis, analyzing all the little threads that could mean a terrorist threat is coming. And what do you think? Are you feeling more confident in the FBI today? Is the FBI a dinosaur that can change? Can it hop, skip, and run after terrorists? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a radical reshaping of the FBI. Director Mueller said today it's time to change this agency root and branch, and he's shifting resources and he's shifting the basic focus of the FBI. We're joined tonight by Elaine Shannon. She's criminal justice correspondent with Time Magazine. You're welcome as well. How much responsibility should the FBI bear for what happened on September 11th, 2001? Should we take the FBI off bank robberies and lock them on to counter terrorism? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Earlier today, I spoke with Republican Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa. He's been one of the FBI's toughest critics in Congress, saying the Bureau needs to shift its focus from Bonnie and Clyde to Osama bin Laden. I asked him if he thought the changes Mueller announced today would make that happen.
Well, if he forgets about points 6, 7, and 8, where he's talking about the usual Bonnie and Clyde stuff that deals with bank robberies and solving crimes and waiting till a crime happens before they get involved, then the answer is only if he forgets those. And if he starts concentrating on prevention of crime, getting involved before there ever is a crime, and that's what bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and terrorism is all about, and it's just the exact opposite of the way the FBI has been doing business, which is the Bonnie and Clyde approach.
They're talking about shifting 620 agents onto the terror front. Is that a significant number? Does that change the profile of the FBI?
I don't think enough, because I think that they still think they have to be involved with every other crime that's committed in America. They aren't willing to take into consideration we have the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Secret Service, the Customs Department, the Coast Guard, the Border Patrol, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, plus all the state and local law enforcement, and the extent to which they think they have to have their fingers in every pie, they're obviously distracted from complete attention to the war on terrorism.
But it sounds like you're saying take the FBI out of all that, even out of bank robberies, just focus then on terrorism. Don't we need the FBI to do crime fighting and crime follow-up in other areas?
As a help, yes. As still a primary function of the FBI, no. Because if we can't count on the FBI leading us to victory in the war on terrorism, particularly the domestic war on terrorism, mm-hmm. then I don't think we're going to win that war. And we're in a whole new game now where the FBI's got to forget about bank robberies unless it's a very significant type of crime. They've got to put all their resources into the war on terrorism.
What do you think of the timing of the FBI director's announcement today? In the past, you've expressed a concern that the FBI puts image over substance. Are you afraid that that's going on here now?
To some extent, yes. I think the Rowley letter and then the quick...
This is Colleen Rowley in Minneapolis?
Yeah. Ms. Rowley's whistleblowing letter in which she condemned Central FBI, and it was highlighted to such extent by the news media that I think this was a hurried-up news conference. I don't think everything in the news conference was necessarily hurried up. I think that Mueller was working on some of these reforms anyway, but the haste of the news conference, I think, is an indication that they wanted to cover their hindside.
They're talking about adding staff to the FBI. Can you change culture by adding staff, or do you need to actually move some people out of the agency?
I think that the key to changing the culture of the FBI that Mueller says he wants to change is the extent to which he's a new person and he brings in all the top-level management and even some middle management that's entirely new. I think that's the only way you're going to change the culture.
Senator Grassley, when will you feel that the country can be confident in the capacity of the FBI on the terror front? What will it take?
Well, I think only time's going to tell that. And if we don't have another terrorist attack, I suppose you could say it's successful. But I think that what we have to think in terms of not just the changes of the FBI are going to take away risk from the American citizens. I think we in government, including the FBI, lead people in America to believe that we can have a risk-free society if the federal government does everything right. And it doesn't matter how right the FBI is, how much it changes its nature and its culture, the bottom line of it is that each American citizen is going to have to assume some responsibility of a potential terrorist attack, and how would you react accordingly?
But even with that, you want to see major change in the FBI to minimize that risk?
Without a doubt. If the FBI does not concentrate on winning the war on terrorism, particularly the domestic elements of it, it can't be done. And so consequently, we have to move forward with a change of the culture and change of the attitude from bank robberies, car thefts, Bonnie and Clyde, to bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and terrorism.
Senator Grassley, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be with you. Thank you very much.
That was Republican Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa. We're talking about reshaping the FBI tonight. There, Senator Grassley is saying, forget about bank robberies. It's a whole new ballgame. The FBI must focus on terror. What do you think? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined by Elaine Shannon. She's criminal justice correspondent with Time Magazine. Elaine Shannon, these are strong words. Forget about bank robberies. It's a whole new ballgame. The way most of us perceive the FBI, that sounds like a big shift.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't think it should happen, because even if you said this should be the Federal Bureau of Counterterrorism, I don't think the senator realizes that a lot of these terrorist groups have raised their money through bank robberies, and they've also raised a lot of money through things like credit card fraud. Remember Ahmed Rassam, the guy who was caught with explosives heading down between Vancouver and Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the money for that group didn't come from Afghanistan, as far as I can tell. It came from credit card fraud that was being perpetrated by a group of Algerian radicals up in Montreal. So if the FBI walks away from conventional crime, there's still a lot of Americans and others who are being victimized by this crime, and also they may not get an early warning on some of these groups who are raising money not just for commercial purposes but for ideological purposes.
Mm-hmm. And Jack Beatty, you hear in everyone's comments the heads up that things are going to change in terms of the way the FBI has to work if it's going to meet the kind of new expectations that have been raised after 9/11, that it's going to be more intrusive. It's going to be looking over more people's shoulders. It's going to be a little less delicate about, the Constitution?
Well, we have to hear more about that. I mean, that's the part of it that may be controversial, and that, but it may be we'll need new legislation. It may be that the Patriot Act has changed legislation sufficiently that they can have some margin to operate. But, you know, the other thing about the FBI, you almost might call it, does not play well with others. I mean, this has been the characteristic of this agency forever. In his old days, J. Edgar Hoover used to invite people into his office where he had this purplish insect-repelling light they had to walk through to make sure they were clean, they were sanitized, they weren't bringing in germs. Well, that's a paradigm of what this agency has. Really, much of its effort has gone into covering its own hindquarters, as the senator said. I mean, again and again, what did we see after September 11th? According to the Rowley letter, Director Mueller was even doing this post September 11th with regard to the Moussaoui case,
bending the truth.
And we also know that they did not tell the president, even though they knew both Mueller and Ashcroft, they did not tell the president about the Phoenix letter. And what was the motive of that other than cover our tracks? Don't, you know, and this has been the FBI's modus operandi forever. That and, you know, according to the Seymour Hersh and the current New Yorker, even post-September 11th, people from the FAA could not get passes to get into the FBI building in Washington. You know, so these are deep-rooted problems that are in the psyche of the FBI, in the institutional sort of spirit of the place. And ridding it of that is going to be a Herculean undertaking.
Well, today, Mueller is talking about tapping into CIA resources. That's playing with others. Elaine Shannon, he says they're going to bring 50 CIA employees into the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Is this a harbinger of a new, more cooperative FBI?
Yeah, and actually, I mean, there have been periodic exchanges between FBI and CIA. I've talked to people. I've gone over to the CIA and run into FBI people there.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to FBI and run into CIA people there. There hasn't been as good exchange of information as one would like in an ideal world, but I do hope they remain two separate agencies, because I don't think we need you have one agency, you have one bureaucracy, and you have fewer voices to to discuss things, and things tend to get really squelched. So I think a certain amount of healthy tension and dissent is good.
Well, there's clearly enough of a tradition in that that it's not going to go away overnight. We're talking about reshaping the FBI. Are you feeling more confident today in the future of the FBI? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Steve is on the line. Welcome, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Tom, and Elaine and others. Jack. I'm somewhat uncomfortable with the degree of blame that seems to be directed at the FBI right now for some of the things that have happened. I really think that if you look at it in a more holistic way, that the FBI certainly isn't the only agency in the government that believes in CYA. And I believe that we had the info to actually prevent at least some of the attacks, but it isn't really just the FBI's information. It was elsewhere within justice. Let's not forget we were just in a furor about what was happening at the INS.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have to extend our view into other agencies like or other departments like the Department of State. They're the ones that issue the visas. They have their own intelligence collecting capability that should be tied into this.
So, Steve, you're saying look around. There's blame to go around. And thank you for your call. Elaine, Shannon, what about it? The FBI has been taking a lot of heat in the last few weeks. On the other hand, Senator Grassley tells us if the FBI doesn't step up and become the lead on really preventing terrorism, then we're going to lose the war on terror.
Well, I agree with your caller. There's plenty of blame to go around. I mean, I think that we've gotten sort of in a cul-de-sac here with the Phoenix memo. He said, you know, we really should start checking these flight schools to see if the Al-Qaeda is using them to learn how to fly planes or infiltrate people into ground crews and airports. Mm-hmm. And that's a real good idea, and they're doing that now. But he didn't propose going backwards. And even if they had, in July of 2001, the hijackers were out of flight school. They were on the move. The FBI wouldn't have found them if they'd gone that month. If they'd gone back a couple of years, maybe, but their instructors didn't, after the fact, complain and say, you know, I knew those people were really mm-hmm. bad. So how would they have found them? Also, and Colleen Rowley poses the theory that maybe we would have gotten lucky, and maybe from Musawi we would have gotten to the 19 hijackers. Well, according to everybody I've talked to, there were no records of communications, email or phone, between any of the 19 and Musawi on his laptop or on his person.
And this is Colleen Rowley in the Minneapolis office, the staffer there, who says we could have done better, and we were prevented from doing that by nitpicking at headquarters.
That's right. But if you look at the indictment of Musawi, they say what they got was information inside the computer on crop dusting and pesticides, which is probably what you'd find if you looked at a lot of flight students, because they want to be, a lot of them want to be small aircraft operators for commercial reasons. He did have an address book that did have two German phone numbers and the alias of a man who had been the roommate of Muhammad Atta. The man's name is Ramzi bin al-Shib, and eventually they did break through this alias and get to that name, and Ramzi bin al-Shib had sent some money to Musawi, or at least that's the allegation. But could they have done that in 3 weeks to get the information out of Germany, not knowing who Otto was? I really rather doubt it. There was also a letter on Musawi's person that traced back to a man in Malaysia who we now know is Al-Qaeda connected and who had connections with some of the hijackers. But Malaysia in the pre-9/11 atmosphere was not cooperating with the United States on terrorism matters, so I very seriously doubt that in 3 weeks the FBI could have gotten from A to Z on that.
So hindsight certainly magnifies our acuity, but whatever the case, people are looking forward now and talking about a lot of change. David is on the line. Welcome, David. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I'm a private investigator. I've been an investigator for 20 years. I work with many FBI agents.
Okay.
And I sort of want to echo what Jack was saying there a little while ago. There's a really fundamental, deep cultural problem.
What is it?
There's a fundamental dishonesty within the organization. There's no real reward for, you know, telling the detailed truth all the time to your coworkers and your superiors.
Why not, David? What's the motivation, the incentive?
I think it goes back. It's the authoritarian structure of the organization that goes back to Hoover's creation of it. It's when you're in a very hierarchical organization where you're supposed to prevent bad news from going up, and you're always supposed to make yourself look good to the people above you, and you get rewarded for celebrated one-time scores. It's not an organization that produces the kind of complex interconnections between different pieces of information that we need in this.
It's a kind of every man and woman for himself in that.
Exactly,
in your view.
Exactly. Exactly. Everybody runs their own little clique. They get along through the FBI by developing close, informal friendships and networks.
Mm-hmm. We hear your intimate view of it, and that is a very interesting one. Thank you for your call, David. Elaine Shannon, what about it? If we've got this legacy of people out to get the numbers, out to get the convictions, can you turn that organization, whatever Mueller is doing, into the organization that is an effective internal intelligence agency?
Well, certainly it's hard to change a whole agency with an institutional memory like this. But Hoover died in 1972, mm-hmm. so I don't really go back to
30 years.
The Hoover era. I mean, most of the people that are in the FBI, I guess all of them probably were kids then, because you have to retire when you're 50 years old, and you mm-hmm. can retire when you're, I mean, you can retire when you're 50, and you have to retire when you're 57 now. I think your caller is right in that there's a certain homogeneity that sets in, and people really want to, I mean, they fight with each other within the institution, but they don't want to have those fights showing outside. That's why Colleen Rowley did is so radical. But I think that they have done some good work. There are some incidents of terrorism they've prevented. They did a good work on the East Africa bombings trial. They were mm-hmm. out of that. They got a lot of good intelligence. They tell me that one of the things they've learned, though, is that the 19 hijackers learned too, and they learned from watching our public trials in East Africa and mm-hmm. the Rassam case, just how effective the FBI was in exploiting telephone numbers that it found in Africa and elsewhere. And therefore, those guys stayed off the phone. They couldn't find any good phone records of anybody they'd been in contact with in Germany or much of anything else. They are now communicating via Internet cafes, Kinkos,
right, and once again, we see how many challenges to the open society a fight on terrorism represents. We're talking tonight about reshaping the FBI. Are you feeling more confident with news of a shakeup there? How much responsibility should the FBI bear for 9/11? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about reshaping the FBI. Here's Robert Mueller this afternoon on changes ahead and new priorities.
When you come right down to it, the American people look to the FBI to protect the United States against further terrorist attacks. And they look to the FBI to protect the United States against foreign intelligence operations. We are the one federal agency that has that mandate. And while state and local law enforcement can help us, really the American people look to the FBI to perform those two missions, and therefore they have to be our two top priorities.
Director Robert Mueller of the FBI talking today about two top priorities that are not their traditional image in the American mind of the FBI, going after terror and going after foreign intelligence operations. What do you think? Should we take the FBI off bank robberies and lock them on to counterterrorism? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined by Elaine Shannon. She's criminal justice correspondent with Time Magazine, and by our own Jack Beatty. The priorities, Elaine, that the director outlined today, there were 10, And there's a pretty interesting list. Senator Grassley was talking about this earlier. Number one, as he just mentioned, protect the United States from terrorist attack. Number two, protect the U.S. against foreign intelligence operations and espionage. Three, protect the U.S. against cyber-based attacks and high-technology crimes. Four, combat public corruption at all levels. Five, protect civil rights. There we are, halfway into the list, and we're still not talking about the things most people associate with the FBI, which they get to at seven and eight, combat major white-collar crime, combat significant violent crime. Is this a reshuffling of the deck for FBI priorities?
Well, sure it is. There have been domestic and international terrorism units before, but, nobody thought that the United States was going to be under such massive attack. They certainly did think that there could and probably would be attacks here. We wrote a story for Time in December of 1998, mm-hmm. in which we said that intelligence analysts expected Al-Qaeda to try to hit Washington and New York, and in fact, they did so. That story just turned out to be a little bit early.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI is worried about a new one. Bob Mueller said that today. Mm. There could be suicide bombers, but where? They don't know. They don't have the intelligence.
And yet it was 2 years ago that Mr. Mueller's predecessor, Louis Freeh, declared that terrorism was the FBI's top priority. As you say, he created a separate division to combat it then. Do you think this is substantively different now?
Everything in my life, in your life, and everybody else who's listening's life has changed after 9/11. Things that people used to say, well, we'll consider this, see if we can corroborate it, see where it goes. They're just putting it out there. They're just chasing it as fast as they can, and we as journalists are doing the same thing because we don't have the luxury of time, and I hope that we keep the luxury of thought, and I hope we don't throw our Constitution out the window with all this that's going on.
No one wants to do that. But, Jack Beatty, when you talk about revving up a domestic intelligence agency, I can't help but think of how we sneered at Eastern European countries that had powerful domestic intelligence agencies 30 years ago. Now America seems to be embracing it because what's the alternative? There's a threat.
And we have had a domestic intelligence agency, the FBI, through a lot of its history. I mean, from World War II on, when Franklin Roosevelt gave Hoover greater powers, he used them immediately
sure.
to set up private files on people. He called it his obscene file, and he kept information on private citizens, on politicians.
But as you say, the pendulum swung away from that, and now it's a kind of invitation on new grounds to bring that back, put it to urgent use.
Well, of course, then, too, it was supposed to have been put to urgent use. In the Cold War, they were supposed to be fighting communism, and instead they spent a lot of their time, fighting dissent. In the Nixon years, there was a COINTELPRO program that had FBI agents breaking into people's offices. So,
but how do you argue with the World Trade Center that's evaporated?
I'm not arguing with it. I'm just telling you that in the past, we have had these grave mandates, defend the country against fascism, defend it against communism. And within that, the FBI has abused its power. It was, in fact, one of the most dangerous institutions in American political life in the post-war era.
Stephen is on the line. Welcome, Stephen. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I've got a general concern that organizations and people have a tendency to overreact to things that come up in their lives. If the FBI isn't dealing with Bonnie and Clyde, to use the senator's metaphor, who is? And that's not to say that the FBI ought not be fighting terrorism. I think they ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the sense that they probably also ought to be dealing with the Bonnie and Clydes of the world, unless we want to tell them that, they've got the freedom to go do whatever they want.
But then when you hear the senator say we can't do both, how does that leave you feeling, Stephen? He said
someone's got to do it. I mean, is it the state agencies? Do we need to create a new federal bureaucracy, a new kind of intelligence service?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. Elaine Shannon, how about it? The senator was very clear on that. Do you take this as political posturing? Or when he says, look, we've got all this other alphabet soup of agencies, let them deal with it. Our FBI has to be locked on to this terror threat.
I think that's oversimplistic. I mean, I think that maybe he can't do both, but I think the FBI's got plenty of people that don't have to spend their full time thinking about terrorism because you know, it's just in Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia, there may be a couple of suspicious people. There may be 20 or 30, but those field offices are big enough to accommodate other kinds of crimes. And again, you know, the American people expect certain federal crimes to be investigated. The Secret Service does a very good job on white-collar crime. The DEA does a far better job, I think, on most of its drug conspiracy investigations than the FBI, which has come pretty late to that sort of thing. And so I'm not worried about those areas. But to say that the FBI can only gather intelligence about security threats, I think, is not accurate.
Too far the other way,
and
as Steve says.
I prefer not to see it go that way.
Carlos is on the line. Welcome, Carlos. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My main question is, where is Tom Ridge? What is the Office of Homeland Defense doing? Shouldn't he have been at that press conference? Is there possibly some kind of duplication of resources going on, or was the power play going on between the Justice Department and possibly the Office of Homeland Defense?
Sorting it out. Thanks, Carlos, for your call. Elaine, how about it? Where does Tom Ridge fit into this picture? Would you have been surprised to see him at the press conference today, or on the other hand, why wasn't he there?
Well, he has to do with liaison to state and local governments, and I think he particularly deals with some issues like what they call in the trade consequence management. If you have a building that comes down or a biological agent is spread, there are a lot of agencies that have to get into it, health agencies, the fire departments, all that kind of stuff, and to manage the consequences of the attack. The FBI, as far as investigations go, working with the CIA, the Secret Service, and some others, they've got their jurisdiction is pretty well laid out.
So you're seeing Tom Ridge and the Office of Homeland Security more important on the backside of a terrorist act, on the reaction, sort
of
FEMA side?
Well, he's doing a lot
side?
Of coordinating, and I don't call that office, and so I can't really tell you what all's going on there with the yellow alert and the orange alert, and I don't quite understand all that system myself. But I think that Mueller knows that the FBI is looked to by a lot of Americans. They care about what happens to it. They want it to do well. And I think he was talking to Americans directly, and I think he was also talking to the FBI bureaucracy. I think he was reassuring the field that they weren't going to get mashed by a bunch of hotshots at headquarters, and I think he was reassuring people at headquarters that he has brought in, that he wants them to be aggressive. If they screw up, he wants them to say so, and he doesn't want them to be so arrogant and so rigid that they can't admit mistakes and they have to be flexible. He said they cannot be inflexible and stuffy and arrogant and go on as life has gone on before.
And the balance there is somehow more autonomy for FBI agents in the field, but more aggressive analysis at the Washington headquarters. Is that right?
Well, not just analysis. If the Phoenix field office sends in a memo and they're talking about suspicious foreigners going to flight schools, and you got a suspicious foreigner going to a flight school and was in Minneapolis, and you got a memo that somebody in Oklahoma wrote about suspicious foreigners going to flight schools, and you got another piece of paper which says suspicious foreigners are trying to buy 747 cockpit simulator lessons, and somebody ought to be putting that together and getting everybody together and saying, hey, you're right, we ought to have an initiative on these flight schools and not just sort of and see the patterns and also act on them and make sure that those offices have the resources that they need and support them and not just sort of sneer at them.
It sounds like the right formula. Bill is on the line from Erie, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Bill. You're on the air.
Good evening, Tom.
Hi.
Why, the question I have to ask is, and I haven't seen it in the press in the United States except in the Los Angeles Times, but the BBC, Gregory Palast, has reported on this. And it's the book, The Hidden Truth, about FBI agent John O'Neill, who left the agency abruptly in last summer. And he was the lead, well, it was a deputy director, who was the most knowledgeable person on Osama bin Laden. And he was very frustrated in what he was doing, particularly in Yemen, when he went to investigate the coal. They wouldn't even let him investigate. I don't know why there hasn't been more reported on it. It's a bestseller in Europe.
And why would such a good agent walk away?
Right.
Elaine Shannon, do you know this story? What's the tale of John O'Neill?
I haven't read that book. Sounds interesting. There was a good piece about John in The New Yorker.
Yes, I read it.
There was another piece, I think, in Esquire. He was a very knowledgeable man, very controversial within the FBI. He was sort of one of the last of the characters. I mean, he'd really break China if he thought he was right.
And Vietnam vet, very intuitive approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had huge fights with the U.S. ambassador in Yemen who wanted to keep the Yemenis on board the investigation by doing things their way, and he said, you know, we don't have time to do things their way. That's too slow.
It sounds like the kind of guy you'd like to have on a tough case.
He finally got just very, frustrated with the Bureau, and he took this job at the World Trade Center in charge of the security there, and he died on September 11th trying to get his staff out.
Is there something in the change in culture that's supposed to be going on now that might make it more hospitable to agents like John O'Neill?
We'll see. Mueller says that he wants plain-talking, aggressive people who say what they need, support each other, support the field, and tell the rest of the government. I think O'Neill and others, the FBI supported him. Louis Freeh supported him, but the State Department didn't. And Louis Freeh really didn't have the clout to make the State Department support O'Neill, and so they ended up sort of going at each other bureaucratically. I think this is something that should have been arbitrated by the White House, and now I think Bush says he's into it. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Much more to come there. One more call if we can. Paul's on the line. Welcome, Paul. You're on the air.
Hello. I have a question about redundancy of resources here in efforts. The CIA is their primary job is to work on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, et cetera. Is this an efficient use of resources if the FBI has reorged to do basically the same thing?
It's a great question. Our time is running short. But, Elaine, how do you now draw the line between the job, the responsibilities of the CIA and the FBI?
Well, the CIA, it's against the law for them to operate in the United States. If they pick up a trail of somebody who's calling into Minneapolis and somebody has to go find the person that is being called to see if that's a bad person, the FBI has to do that by law, and I don't think that should change.
But to Paul's point, it does sound like an FBI with more of a CIA flavor in its focus and structure.
That's true, and there are going to be some CIA people moving over to the FBI to help analyze, but on the other hand, the CIA has a lot of legal tools and knows how to use it. In this country, we can't do what we do abroad. We have a very strong rule of law, and the FBI is much better versed in how to use those laws to get results than the CIA is, because they've never operated here.
Elaine Shannon, we're nearly out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Elaine Shannon is criminal justice correspondent with Time Magazine. She's author of The Spy Next Door, The Extraordinary Secret Life of Robert Philip Hansen, the most damaging FBI agent in U.S. history. Jack Beatty, we're off to the races, we're told, with a whole new FBI, and yet a lot of skepticism still in Congress about what's unfolding.
Well, yes, given the history, how could there not be with all these revelations and with all the mistakes, the blunders, the disasters of the 90s? But one good sign here, I think, is the way Director Mueller has reacted to this Rowley letter. And by the way, he's been criticized by the Justice Department and the White House for being too open about it. He's saying, in effect, look, if you break the chain of the command and raise a ruckus, I'm going to listen to you. And I don't mind taking the blame for this now. So I think that's a good and un-FBI-like thing to do, and let's hope that it encourages more forward-thinking by good people like Ms. Rowley.
A new slogan for the FBI, raise a ruckus. Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.